strange talk for a wedding morning, but what has happened since gives a meaning to it.
Your own opinion is, then, that some unforeseen catastrophe has occurred to him?
I believe he foresaw some danger, or else he would not have talked so. And then I think what he foresaw happened.
But you have no notion as to what it could have been?
None.
How did your mother take the matter?
She was very angry, and said I was never to speak of Hosmer again.
Oh. And your father? Did you tell him?
Yes. And he seemed to think with me that something had happened, and that I should hear of Hosmer again. As he said, what interest could anyone have in bringing me to the doors of the church and then leaving me? And yet what could have happened to him? And why does he not write? It drives me half mad to think of it. I'm out of my mind with worry. Mr. Holmes, please, you must find him for me, you must.
I shall glance into the case for you, and I have no doubt we shall reach some definite result. Let the weight of the matter rest on me now, and do not let your mind dwell upon it further. Above all, try to let Mr. Hosmer Angel vanish from your memory as he has done from your life.
Then you don't think I will see him again?
I fear not.
Then what has happened to
you? You will leave that question in my hands.
Very well.
Before you go, Miss Sutherland, I should like an accurate description of Mr. Angel and any letters of his that you can spare.
I advertised for him in last Saturday's Chronicle. I have the slip here and four letters and my own address.
Ah, thank you. Where is Mr. Windybank's place of business?
He travels for West House and Marbank, the great claret importers of Fenchurch.
Thank you. You have made your statement very clearly. Please try and remember the advice which I've given you. Let the whole incident be a sealed book, and do not allow it to affect your life.
You are very kind, Mr. Holmes, but I cannot do that. I shall be true to Hosmer. He shall find me ready when he comes back.
For all the preposterous hat and the vacuous face, there was something noble in the simple faith of our visitor, which compelled our respect. With a promise to come again whenever she might be summoned, she laid her little bundle of papers upon the table and went her way. My old friend was silent for a few moments. Then he took down from the rack the old and oily clay pipe, which was to him a counselor. And then leant back in his chair, with the thick blue cloud wreaths spinning up from him, and a look of infinite languor in his face.
Quite an interesting study, that maiden. I found her more interesting than her little problem, which, by the way, is rather a trite one. You'll find parallel cases if you consult my index. Andover in 77 springs to mind. Something of the sort at The Hague last year. Old as the idea is, however, there were one or two details which were quite new to me, but the maiden herself was most instructive.
You appear to read a good deal upon her, which was quite invisible to me.
Not invisible, but unnoticed, Watson. I can never bring you to realize the importance of sleeves, the suggestiveness of thumbnails, or the great issues that may hang from a bootlace.
I think you may find you sell me short there, Holmes.
Then what did you gather from the woman's appearance? Describe it.
Well, apart from the hat and the boa, her jacket was black, with black beads sewn upon it, and a fringe of little black jet ornaments. Her dress was brown, rather darker than coffee colour, with a little purple plush at the neck and sleeves. Her gloves were greyish and were worn through at the right forefinger. Her boots I didn't observe. She had small, round, hanging gold earrings and a general air of being fairly well to do in a vulgar, comfortable, easy-going way.
Upon my word, Watson, you're coming along wonderfully.
Thank you, Holmes.
You've really done very well indeed. True, you've missed everything of importance, but you've hit upon the method, and you've a quick eye for colour. Never trust to general impressions, but concentrate yourself upon details. Now, my first glance is always at a woman's sleeve. In a man, it's perhaps better first to take the knee of the trouser.
I did observe the worn glove.
Indeed, but you fail to see that both glove and finger were stained with violet ink, an obvious indication that she'd written a note before leaving home, but after being fully dressed. And it must have been this morning, or the mark would not remain clear upon the finger.
And what else?
The plush on her sleeves, a most useful material for showing traces. The double line above the wrist where the typewriter presses against the table was beautifully defined. The sewing machine of the hand.